You're listening to Succeed, Just Let Go, the podcast that'll change how you think and change your life. I'm Willie Horton and I'm a psychologist, been helping people change their lives since 1996, broadcasting from the French Alps, and delighted to have you along. Let's take this week's step in the right direction.
I've alluded to the past quite a number of times in the last couple of podcast episodes. I talked about in our last episode how it is counterproductive, to say the very least, to try to go back to revisit your childhood, to try to figure out why you are how you think you are as an adult, something I'm going to come back to in a minute. I've mentioned the inevitable past that we all share, evolution, our dim and distant past, and indeed why we are how we are in terms of how the normal mind actually works. And I've also mentioned, very briefly, I alluded to it in the last podcast episode, how we can't learn from our past mistakes. Now, a couple of people have said to me since that episode, surely I'm wrong in relation to that. I said, no, I'm right, but don't call me Shirley. No, sorry about that silly joke. If you want to explore what I actually meant by that, there is a whole episode devoted to that. Episode number 162, What Can We Learn From Our Past Mistakes? That episode concluded that we can learn nothing from our past mistakes because, as I said in last week's episode, you didn't make your past mistakes. Your conceptual self made your past mistakes. It's a little bit like you could forgive yourself for you know not what you did. And I actually mean that because the things that we did when we were mindless, they weren't done by the person that you really are. And what we are talking about in all these podcast episodes is further moving forward on the journey or the adventure of self-awareness and self-discovery. I also alluded to the past last week in relation to a number of people saying to me that they couldn't trust themselves because they had made so many stupid mistakes in the past. It's the same as making the mistakes or the bigger mistakes that aren't just decisions, I suppose, that I mentioned a moment ago and that we explored in episode number 162. Now, there's been a huge amount of discussion and debate amongst online program owners. They're people who own my online program, the Psychology of Success online program. And by the way, as a complete aside, obviously, by virtue of the fact that you're listening to this, you don't have to be an online program owner to explore what we talk about here. You don't have to be an online program owner to discover who you really are, to become self-aware. Certainly, it helps and it accelerates the process because ultimately it is a process in restructuring your brain. But even if you just want to dip your toe in the water further than the way in which we explore things here in this podcast, you can click the link in your podcast player to go through the current free online training program that I have, inevitably online, which will enable you more deeply, not just understand, but actually begin to experience the difference between the normal crazy mindlessness that is generated by the way in which our brain operates on automatic pilot, as against the mindfulness that we develop when we come to our senses, a phrase that I've used on a number of occasions over the last few weeks. But as I was saying, there was quite a bit of debate about episode 162 amongst our online program owners. And ultimately, one of the online program owners made what for me and what for all of us was the most important point. First of all, we all agreed that we cannot learn from our past mistakes because they weren't mistakes we made. And In the course of that conversation, we inevitably explored how people jump from one bad job into another or from one abusive relationship into another, and how normal crazy people operating on automatic pilot will always end up in the same place because, quite simply, that's what automatic pilots do. But one of our online program owners made a key intervention. He said there is one thing that we can learn from our past mistakes, and that is stop making mistakes. What a wonderful insight. Now, it doesn't mean, by the way, that you won't make mistakes today, tomorrow, or next week. But the more we stop ourselves and say to ourselves, I shouldn't have done that, or that was a bad choice that I made, the more we do that, the more we stop ourselves to become aware of how we're behaving or misbehaving, the more we build a momentum to enable us understand and be aware of what we're doing in real time so that we do adjust our trajectory, so that we do adjust the course of our lives, so that we do further enhance our understanding of ourselves and how we can behave rather than misbehave through building a momentum based on choice. The choice to realize whether I'm present or all over the place, the choice to be aware of whether I'm doing the right thing or the wrong thing, the choice of becoming present moment to moment. In other words, the choice of meditating every morning, the choice, as we discussed before, of mini meditating during the course of the day. Let's explore this from the other way around. We've talked recently about choosing to be present. I've just alluded to it again. We have talked about becoming aware of when we're not present. We've talked about why we would choose to be present and the difference that our presence makes to our own behavior, our own actions, our own life, and indeed the lives of those we love, the lives of those around us in more general terms. So the more we make those little choices, the less we're going to have to stop ourselves to say to ourselves, I need to learn to stop making mistakes, because the momentum builds from all directions. All you need to do every morning is start the ball rolling. And we start the ball rolling by doing our morning meditation. The more we meditate, the clearer our mind becomes. The more we are inclined to choose to mini-meditate during the course of the day or to stop ourselves during the course of the day to have a moment of awareness, a moment of self-awareness. The more that momentum builds, the less scope our normally minded automatic pilot has to operate, to the point where we know from neuroscience that eventually, as a result of meditation and the restructuring of the subcortical brain, the thoughts that drive the old automatic pilot become precluded from getting involved in our ordinary everyday life. All we have to do, in other words, today is turn up, turn up, turn up, turn up, and remind ourselves to turn up till we get to the point where we don't need to remind ourselves anymore because we're operating in a different way from a different part of our brain. And what that means is I don't need to pay any attention to the past at all. I need to forget the past completely. The past is a foreign land. First of all, I need to forget the way in which evolution has burdened me with my evolutionary past. Now, granted, were it not for evolution, were it not for the fact that we became the preeminent species on the planet, we would not be here and the world would be being run by mutant flying turtles or something like that. In other words, we made it here. And that was evolution's purpose, to survive and to thrive, what is known in evolutionary terms as the survival of the fittest. Now, before we go any further, I need to clarify what that actually means, because most people think that it means that the fitter I am, the more I can beat off the competition, the faster I can run away from man or woman eating tigers, the better placed I am to survive. That is not what Darwin meant. That is not what the phrase actually means. The survival of the fittest means that those who best fit with their environment are most likely to thrive. Fittest means, do I fit into my environment? Now, consider where we are as modern human beings. Our brains developed over a period of 1.8 million years, and the brain that you and I have as a result of evolution is one that is equipped to go out and hunt for tonight's dinner and gather some berries, fruits, and vegetables to go with whatever we kill for tonight's dinner. As an evolutionary psychologist once put it, by the time you and I develop suitable structures in our brain to enable us understand that when we sit behind the wheel of a car, we are effectively in charge of a life-threatening machine. We can go around killing other people through simple carelessness, as happens all the time on the roads. By the time our brain adapts in evolutionary terms to being able to drive completely in a focused fashion, we'll probably be teleporting. Cars will be no more. Evolution is a slow and grinding process. And we need to, whilst obviously thanking evolution for the fact that we are not ruled by flying mutant turtles, we need to drop evolution. Forget about it. What do I mean by that? You need to take charge of your own personal evolution. That's not a catchphrase. That's not a nice idea. That's a scientific fact. Even if you were to meditate each morning for the next 5 mornings, brain scans would show that your brain would have already started to restructure some of its key components as a result of you deliberately choosing to come to your senses through meditation for the next 5 mornings. What happens when we meditate? Well, first of all, as we know from previous conversations, we turn on our ability to focus, an ability that is completely missing from the normally minded person as a result of the way in which evolution developed our brains to enable us to become hunter-gatherers. So when we meditate, we first and foremost turn on our so-called attentional spotlight. But much more importantly than that, through regularly turning on our attentional spotlight, and as I said, that regularly means, for starters, just 5 mornings in a row, we begin to restructure the attentional spotlight. And what that means is that as a result of turning on our attentional spotlight during meditation, our attentional spotlight becomes available to us when we're not meditating. As I've said to you recently in a couple of podcast episodes, you don't meditate to be cool, calm, and collected and focused while you're meditating. You meditate to be cool, calm, and collected and focused when you're not meditating, when it actually matters in the cut and thrust of your everyday life. So you can embrace opportunity, so that you create opportunity as a result of your presence, and so that you can actually embrace life's challenges, surmount them, and transform what might otherwise be a disaster into what my online program owners know as perfect moments. Let's continue with what I was saying in relation to regular meditation, because regular meditation, in turning on and restructuring the attentional spotlight, which is in effect the conductor of our brain's orchestra, through its active involvement in our everyday life as a result of meditation, the key components of the subcortical brain that the attentional spotlight is conducting start playing harmonious music together as a result of their not only restructuring themselves individually, but because of their individual restructuring, they start communicating with each other in a completely novel way, so that we effectively switch the brain that evolution gave us from being totally focused on existential threat to obviously still being focused on threat, every day, but also being focused on opportunity. You must remember, as an aside, just to clarify what I've just said, that evolution gave us a brain that was focused on nothing in the course of our ordinary everyday lives, so we could be focused absolutely where we to be confronted by a man or woman eating tiger. In other words, evolution gave us a brain that was only focused on threat. By restructuring your brain through regular meditation, by reconfiguring the subcortical components of the brain so that they talk to each other in a completely new way, we flick that switch that I mentioned a moment ago so that we are now equipped with a brain that is focused equally on opportunity as well as threat. That is a life-changing restructuring of the brain, and that is the personal evolution that I'm talking about. People who meditate have a different shaped brain to people who do not meditate. They are the next step in human evolution. You can be, maybe you already are, the next step in human evolution as a result of simply choosing every morning to sit down and come to your senses for a few minutes. In doing that and in restructuring these parts of your brain, you have got that ball rolling. And that ball is like a snowball that gathers pace to the point where you'll end up in flow most of the time every day, so that you won't have to remind yourself to stop making mistakes. The past really will be a foreign country because you're in the present all of the time. So you need to forget the fact that evolution burdened you with something that you can change quite easily. You need to forget anything that happened to you during your formative years. Indeed, as we explored in last week's podcast episode, the phenomenon of childhood amnesia ensures that you forget the things that formed the fundamentals of your personality before the age of 3. Simply from the perspective of psychological self-defense. We also explored, when we talked about that last week, how a psychoanalyst might lie you on a couch and encourage you to go back and dig into a past that has no relevance to the here and now. That people would say to me, hold on, I have this chip on my shoulder and that chip on my shoulder because of what my parents did to me, or because of what my siblings did to me, or because of the way I was abused when I was young and impressionable. And by the way, we were all abused to a greater or lesser extent. I'm not talking about serious abuse, but I'm talking about the abuse that is thrown at us by mindless people. And seeing as 96% of people are mindless, the chances are that our parents were normal, crazy people and said things to us that meant nothing to them. It was a throwaway remark in the course of their ordinary adult non-life, existing from one day to the next, but it made and left an impression on somebody who was all there, particularly between the age of 2 and 3. So we all have chips on our shoulders. And anybody with whom I've ever worked one-to-one wants to know why they have the chips on their shoulder. Why their particular set of chips? How did they get them? Why were they put upon so that they now behave this way? And as I said to you a moment ago, people will blame anybody and everybody, in particular their parents. But this is not a blame game. How could you blame somebody that loved you, that didn't know that they needed to be fully present, that didn't know that being normal was wrong? How could you blame somebody like that? Why would you blame somebody like that when there is nothing to be gained from blame? We're not talking about blame in any of these episodes at all. That's why, as I said a few minutes ago, you're not going to learn from your past mistakes. Why would you even think about it? Why would you go and blame yourself? Why would you blame your parents for the chips that you think you have on your shoulders? Because you don't have them on your shoulders. You only think you have them on your shoulders. We're not talking about blame here at all. We're talking about responsibility. And we're talking about you taking responsibility for the one and only thing that you can exert absolute responsibility over in this life of yours. And that is your own state of mind. You know, people get themselves all upset about the fact that they can't control this, that, or the other, that they can't control their lives, that they feel as if they are out of control, that they've no control over the way in which their life moves from one day to the next. And they're right. They're right. Earthquakes, wars, natural cataclysms. We've no idea when something will befall us over which we have no control. I live in a place where a load of people came over the ski season to ski and discovered green fields and got all upset because they had no control over the weather. I know that sounds mad, but that is why people ended up being stressed, having spent money to bring their skis to green fields. People get upset because they have no control over their holidays, over their weather, over their career, over their business. And we don't have control over any of those things because there are so many other factors moving from moment to moment in an environment that is constantly on the move. But we have enormous influence over everything in our lives if we take control over the one thing over which we can exert absolute control, our own state of mind. And that is why we don't need to think about or worry about or concern ourselves with why we thought we had these chips on our shoulders. That is why we don't need to lie on a psychoanalyst's couch and try to dig into a past that is irrelevant to the here and now. People will say to me, but hold on, very often people need to resolve their past or come to terms with their past in order to move forward. That's rubbish. Absolute rubbish. We simply need to stop paying attention to our past. Now let me explain what I mean by that. Because if we are using our minds normally, our brain's normal automatic pilot uses our past to enable us to survive our present. That's all it does. And that is why people keep making the same mistakes, keep jumping from one bad job to another, from one abusive relationship to another. That is why normal crazy people keep doing the same thing, expecting different results. The definition of madness. Because our automatic pilot uses our past to enable us to survive our present. The actual mechanics of that are that we learn things through snapshot learning, particularly during the third year of our lives. We've talked about that more than once at this stage. And those snapshots become a volume of programs that our automatic pilot uses to say, well, what do we think is going on here today? And it has nothing to do with what's going on here today. The automatic pilot will thumb through its photograph album of programs, pick one that enables us understand the similarity between what we think is going on today and something that happened to us when we were three, and we will react automatically accordingly. And that isn't living, but at least we're going to make it through the day, bearing in mind that that is the brain that evolution gave us. Why would you need to go back to discover what has you misbehaving now when all you need to do is be present now, pay attention to the reality of the here and now, come to your senses in the here and now, which will automatically, it's a different kind of automatically altogether, which will automatically enable you be present, have presence, know what's going on, know how to act, which is a world away from reacting, and you'll end up being the right person in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing effortlessly. That is the evolutionary advantage that regular meditation gives you. Other people have said to me, but there's a whole branch of psychology that is devoted to enable people going back and digging up their past. And anybody who ever says that to me, including a number of psychoanalysts who at least were psychoanalysts when they bought the online program first and then realized the damage they were potentially doing to their clients or customers. Let me explain that very briefly. People who help you go back to revisit the past don't enable you revisit the past. They enable you relive the past, amplify the past, and make matters worse rather than better. But I quote a very good friend of mine, a professor of psychology in one of the UK's leading universities, who I won't identify because he may not like to be quoted on the basis of what I'm about to say, to a number of his peers. He told me many years ago, when we got in touch for the first time, that most people become psychologists to make themselves feel better about themselves. I'm not going to repeat that, because it's crazy even hearing it just once. You don't need to push your hands in somebody who says to you, I can take you back to the past, help you resolve the past so that you can move forward in the present. No, cut out the middleman. All you have to do is be present. Let's look at it from the perspective of neuroscience. When we're using our mind normally, our brain's automatic pilot thumbs through what the neural lab in UCLA has computed as 70,000 thoughts whizzing through your brain every day. Those 70,000 thoughts are largely, 97%, the same thoughts from one day to the next, and they're all the same thoughts that you've been thinking since the shutters came down on your attentional spotlight when you were ready to become a hunter-gatherer at the age of 12 or 13. You see the disadvantage that evolution gave us in the modern age. The really important of those 70,000 thoughts are ones that you learned when you were young and impressionable before the age of 3. Neuroscience proves conclusively that when we're using our minds normally, those thoughts are what enable us make it through the day. They enable us make it through the day because that is where our attention is given. Our attention breathes life into those 70,000 thoughts. If I learn to pay attention to what's actually going on in the here and now, and that's the advantage that meditation gives us, if I learn to come to my senses and not judge them based on the 70,000 thoughts that have been rattling around in my head all my adult life, but actually just experience what I'm seeing, feeling, hearing, smelling, and tasting. If I learn through meditation to pay attention to the here and now, I'm no longer breathing life into the thoughts that gave me the chips on my shoulder, the thoughts that are holding me back, the thoughts that get in my own way and stop me changing my life. Those thoughts simply have no power over me anymore because I've taken their power away by giving my attention to the reality of the here and now. That is how it actually works in the piece of equipment between your two ears. The neural traffic of you experiencing the here and now travels down completely different neural pathways in the subcortical brain than the normally minded person's neural traffic, which gets stuck in a loop in the posterior cingulate cortex of the brain where our 70,000 self-defeating, self-limiting thoughts are stored. Your self-limiting, self-defeating, self-doubting thoughts are nothing when you don't give them your attention anymore. That is the enormous advantage, another enormous advantage that meditation gives us. So forget the past. It's a foreign land. No, you don't even need to forget the past. Just be present. All you have to do is experience the present, train yourself to be present, and then you will experience what you really are. I alluded to this last week as well. People say to me, what? Surely you mean who I really am? Yeah, I mean who you really are. You are a bundle of potential that can change your life by simply, as I said a minute ago, being the right person in the right place at the right time, knowing what's going on and doing the right thing effortlessly. That's the advantage that meditation gives you, the presence that comes from training your mind to pay attention to the present. But what are you? You're a bundle of energy. Yeah, we look separate. We look physical. We feel solid. But we're a bundle of vibrating energy operating in an energetic universe. When I'm using my mind normally, my energy is turned back in on itself. It's swilling around in the posterior cingulate cortex of the brain, swilling around in the same 70,000 thoughts every day, and actually blocking the flow of the vital energy that moves through my biosphere, in other words, my body, and my energy field around me. Now, when I use that phrase, people often say to me, "Are you talking about my aura?" And I say, "Yeah," but I don't like using that word because people will go around, you know, plucking your aura and cleansing your aura and telling you the color of your aura. And it's all rubbish. Your aura is simply akin to the demilitarized zone, if I can put it like that, between your physical body and the madness all around you. Our energy field stretches out roughly arm's length, perhaps a little bit more, around us in all directions. And we know it, even as normal crazy people know when somebody has invaded your space, got too close to you, because they're actually in you. They're in your energy field. We know from quantum physics, but we also know from Kirlian photography, Kirlian videography, that we are energy, and there is a transactional energy exchange between us and those around us. We've talked before about how a bully takes your energy because they feel, because they're living in their past, they feel that they are lacking in energy and they need to take it from other people. In other words, as we've said before, bullies don't impose themselves on other people. They're wanty and needy people who are taking other people's energy to fill what they perceive as their own black hole. When we allow our automatic pilot run riot, as it does in the normally minded individual, when we allow our automatic pilot bury ourselves in the 70,000 thoughts that come from our past, thereby enabling us to survive today, not live today. When we allow that happen, our energy never flows freely. Our energy becomes blocked in our primary energy field, in other words, in our bodies. Our energy becomes blocked in our primavascular system, what acupuncturists would call the energy meridians in the body. So that a mind that is ill at ease creates a body that is diseased. It's simply a statement of fact. When we stop paying attention to the thoughts in the posterior cingulate cortex of our brain, when we stop feeding the beast, when we stop breathing life into the thoughts from a past long gone, our energy begins to flow freely. So our energy isn't trapped inside us anymore. Our energy isn't creating roadblocks to our own potential. The freeing up of our energy frees up our potential so that we flow, what athletes call being in the zone. We flow in the moment and our energy flows out into the universe, influences our environment, doesn't just notice and embrace opportunity, but creates opportunity. Doesn't just notice and embrace synchronicity, but creates synchronicity. And as we've said before, this presence, this flow of our own energy raises the lives, the games of those around us too. And that's particularly important for those whom we love. Ultimately, what I'm saying here is that there is no merit whatsoever in thinking about yesterday. There's no merit in thinking about an hour ago. There's no merit in thinking at all. There is only merit in being, in flowing, in being in the moment, in experiencing the moment, the reality of the moment, and in having a sense of the direction in which you want the trajectory of your life to effortlessly move. Now, I didn't say knowing, I didn't say having a plan. It's something we will talk about in the coming episodes, because ultimately, the person that we discover when we free our minds, the person that we discover when we allow our energy flow freely, that person knows the trajectory in which we would love our lives to effortlessly flow. That is the true potential that we actually release when we diligently and in a disciplined fashion choose every day to sit down and meditate and further encourage the ball that we started rolling the first time that we meditated to gather pace and effortlessly change our lives.
You've been listening to succeed, just let go. To get involved, join me in my Facebook group, strangely enough called To Succeed, Just Let Go. And for more information, visit www.willie-succeed.com.